hold on, the panelist here, where's...
No, the panelist here. Just
Paul,
one of them.
Paul, where's Paul? Hold on. Paul,
he's at the bar.
He's got a
bar.
Drink and some...
he can hear from
we've been,
the bar.
We've been relegated to the benches.
You don't have to be relegated.
Okay. The session was, partly at least, about business models. And the thing that strikes me... The thing that strikes me about what's been going on in London, particularly this part of London, the last 10 years, is an incredible amount of innovation and creativity in terms of design, in terms of content, music, design, websites, interactivity, but contrast with a complete lack of innovation in terms of business models and commercial reach. And what's striking, I know you don't want to always make these comparisons with Silicon Valley, but what's striking is that of all the businesses that you mentioned, John, you've all helped, like Lateral, incredibly innovative, award-winning companies, like those companies in the cluster, they're all essentially doing now what they did 10 years ago, which is being guns for hire. It's very hard to think of any of those businesses from the cluster that have got consumer brands, patented technology, devices, or new social media platforms. I can think of very few companies that have come out of London and make that kind of leap, which they have done obviously in the States and other places.
Last FM.
And I know L-Shift did some patented technology. But on the whole, and I know it's a generalisation, that's what strikes me as the big difference. We are still, despite all this investment, despite all this progress, we're essentially still guns for hire.
There's a very simple reason for why.
Why is that, and why weren't businesses able to make that kind of
around 300 million people in America, in the US, right? So actually, being able to actually use that as a base, it's why China is going even faster. Is that actually, in terms of making an impact in the UK, right? Even if you're the biggest thing in the UK, if you can't make an impact, you know, fairly major, substantive impact in the digital world, i.e., what was America, now it's elsewhere, then you can. And for that, you shed loads of money, right? And we've never had shed loads of money to actually make those incursions into other territories. 60 million people.
So you're saying it's a lack of venture capital investment?
No, I think it's much easier to get into bigger numbers with smaller scale investment because you've got a larger gene pool.
I'm going to do a roving brief now. I'm going to do a roving brief, and I'm going to pick on Ian Dowson now. Ian has written some of the most well thought through, well researched pieces about what actually makes business happen in and around Tech City that I've ever seen. And if I'm right, Ian, you also come from a finance background.
Yeah, I come.
So it strikes me as always a bit odd that when we're always told that the square mile is the world capital of capital, that businesses less than a mile from the square mile can't get any, if John's to be proved right. So what's...
Wasn't the call from Romani?
No.
So that wasn't what I was saying.
No, but what are we missing here? There's clearly some kind of disjoint between money, markets, and ambition going on here. So, Ian, what's the locus of that?
I think what happens in Silicon Valley, and I've spent a lot of time out there, you get networked capital and networked financiers, right? And you've never ever had those kind of networked financiers in the startup arena. But the good news is you're now getting them. Right, the environment is worth $2 billion a year, 2012, and you're seeing the emergence of the networked financier. Right, one example of that is the Silicon Valley Bank. Right, if you've got an idea, go and speak to them, they won't turn you away. And gradually, that dynamic is occurring. One of the most fundamental things that is occurring in London at the moment is fintech investment, that's financial services investment, and the traditional money machine, which is 200 yards away, is now starting to get interested in fintech. And believe it or not, they've invested $3 billion in it, right? $1.5 billion have gone into challenger banks, right? But there isn't a bank which resides in Facebook yet, Please invent one. You'll make a fortune.
But isn't that the next thing?
Does that, or I'll give you
Face Bank. I'm gonna definitely trademark that.
I'll give you two other things.
I'll
give you two other things which will force the two communities to come together. If you look at Bitcoin, and you strip away the fact it's run by a load of uber geeks, and it might be used for gun running, the drugs, and Iran, right? You have the ability to transfer wealth to any other human within 2 minutes anywhere on the planet.
Yeah. So without any government interaction.
Without any government interaction. And you don't have to pay 3% visa tax.
No, big one,
right?
And no, I haven't.
The finance world is becoming aware of this.
He's only saying that because it's being recorded.
Right, and they're coming up. They're getting nearer to you all. They need your skills. They realise they can't design anything. They realise they can't create anything. They realise they can't develop a product with a cultural resonance, which all you people can do.
But between Bitcoin and Flutter, do you know Flutter?
Yeah.
Right, because Flutter is... hands up who knows Flutter?
No, I don't know.
Right, so Flutter was actually came out of Pirate Bay. Or some folk who were associated with it, and the idea was that when you see something, you set a set amount every month for media. But whenever you see anything you really like, you basically hit it's a bit like the like button, but actually you give them money. Right? And because of its gestation, because of where it came from, right, it was like, oh no, we're just subsidizing piracy. But actually this model is a phenomenal model. They just extended it to 3D printing, I think, so it was, and they're just doing likes as well, or tweets or something like that. But there's a whole bunch of models which are actually so contradictory to you know the old world that they're being. You're right. They're not being promoted in the right way, and then actually because it destabilizes a bunch of things.
I'm going to jump across the aisle now because Paul mentioned earlier that most of the customers that he's selling to don't give a damn about models. Sitting across from me and a near neighbour of John's, I understand, is David Holloway, who's actually spent a lot of the last decade working with people who similarly don't give a damn about the model, and unless presented with the opportunity in the right way, don't even give a damn about whether there's a definition of the creative industry is worth having, but that this represents a real life chance for them. So, David, do you want to talk a bit about...
Are you talking about the advertisers I know or the kids I know?
I'm talking about the kids. I'm talking about the kids that you're working with and the Ideas Foundation. And how any of the stuff that we're talking about here...
Well, in the break, what I was saying is that...
Could you just do 30 seconds of the Ideas Foundation for those who don't?
Right. I'm CEO of the Ideas Foundation. Ideas Foundation is run by a guy called Robin White. Robin White, he's known for The Future's Bright, The Future's Orange. I mean, he invented that. Unfortunately, he's also invented 118118. And that's his... And his idea was there's a lot of people out there who don't make it academically who are creative, and he's absolutely right, and that's who we work with. He's a creative, so couldn't actually put all the nuts and bolts together on that. I try to put the nuts and bolts together on that, and I've reached a ceiling, and we're after a business and enterprise manager at the moment who's going to take it to the next level. But what we do, what we started doing was, his idea was he would go into schools around here. We started off in Hackney. He'd go into schools, put kids into an agency, and everything would be, so mainly black kids, going into an agency, so they turn up at sort of Ogilvy's or Saatchi's, and it would be complete chaos. So I came in and worked on bringing the industry into the schools and gradually sort of melding the whole lot together. And now we've got quite a lot of kids who've gone through that sort of process. They've learned, basically, they learn how to put it all together in the schools, then go and get placements, work for clients, and after that they would be able to sort of get on a ladder and go into the sort of system.
Can I just say, David got me into Stony Brook?
It was Kidbrook School.
Kidbrook. Having to teach 13-year-olds how to design or how to conceptualise mobile applications. And it doesn't matter who you've ever spoken to before in terms of, like, you know, clients. Right? I've never been so intimidated in my entire life. Sitting in front of two rooms of 13-year-olds.
Yeah.
Who basically my... "Hey, I met Kurt Cobain," just said.
Who?
Who?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, so they're coming up from the sort of grassroots culture. We did a thing the other day for Aviva, right? And I had these kids from Aviva, and they went, and the thing was, is how do you get kids to save? And they went, "Well, of course, it's easy, and it's get what now." I was like, "What?" As anybody in here, I think, would say. Well, what is beginning to bubble up from the thing? What is money? Yeah, and it's get guap now, not get guap now. And that was what they came up with. Brilliant ideas. Viva just didn't get it at all. They went, "Well, no, our clients wouldn't get that." They forgot that they were asked after getting kids to buy into this. But that's the sort of stuff we do. We do it online. If you go and Google "I'm creative," we're now doing that online. That's what I do. But what I felt about the conversation was about layers. And what John was saying, I think what we were saying about the creativity in this country is down here. It's right on the floor, right on the ground. It's actually in primary schools, in schools, and it's out with people who are not making money, who are just doing stuff. I mean, at the moment, it's like raw creativity, making stuff, hacking, that sort of thing. Yeah. That bubbles up, and some of those people who make stuff, create stuff, make beautiful stuff, get to sell it. Other people, it gets known, and other people sell it for them, and gradually it goes up into the sort of the mainstream. And it's that kind of linear stuff. And I mean, what we do is trying to get our kids into that, whether they just get their rocks off by making the stuff and being creative, fine, and going elsewhere. Whether they find they start off there and become and actually want to go and be planners, you know, something like that in the industry, move elsewhere, that's okay too.
Thank you, David. I'm going to start bossing you out now and throw some questions.
Export. What can we export?
The thing that David just said about layers is true of every other country in the world. It's true of China. Think of China, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's true. Do they get the same kind of rough creativity they
get?
They only make
punk
sound like rough stuff.
Not now, but in the future they might. People in China are very interested in punk, actually. Yeah, who knows what's going to happen with the one-fifth of the population within China.
Surely it's still about opportunity to get recognised, and actually, you know, I grew up in Scotland, and scary to say, but you know, I came to London from being a very big fish in Edinburgh, and that's within the UK, to being a very small fish here, and sort of had to build my way up. And if that's what happens in the UK, I mean, you know, if you're sitting in Ljubljana, you know, it's like very difficult to get noticed doing anything. And the other, to Tom's question again, there was two parts to it, because one of it is about scale in terms of, our natural way to scale is actually requires language. Right? If we're going into Europe, we have to actually have support an awful lot of languages, which if you're a small developer, actually makes it very problematic. You know, and you've got lots of culture. Yes, absolutely, every country has a way up, but then you get stuck there. You know, until you get out, until things are becoming international, and by virtue of being in London, you are by definition, you know, whether it's inferred or actual, right, international.
This time in even sort of 25 years, maybe a bit longer than that, you know, the idea that you'd sit in a room and talk about your country and its creative value and exporting it, that might be absurd to the next few generations, because, you know, they're already talking to each other internationally, they're already kind of thinking beyond that kind of rather quaint notion of the 19th century invention of the nation state. You know, maybe this idea of kind of exporting and having these kind of units of economic measurement and just as a little bit of a nonsense in the long term. Getting a bit blue sky here.
Well, I just wanted to comment on that. It feels to me that some of this does feel a bit, although it feels really exciting because of where we are and what's happening, it does feel very, dangerously narrow, actually.
Dangerously.
You know, you said narrow.
Yeah.
You know, you said 2000. I mean, to me, you know, I don't know. I mean, who used to come? I mean, I used to come here before 2000. You know, I was with friends at the weekend. A woman who's an artist who lives on Shepherdess Walk, which is just around the corner. She's been living there for 25 years. And we were talking about how I didn't know her before. You know, we used to frequent the Blue Note Club, and it was the Blue Note Club in Hoxton 20 odd years ago. And it seems to me that some of what we're talking about is a very, very, quite a recent phenomenon, actually. So some of the changes, and I'm not saying it's an unimportant moment, but I'm sort of tempted to go back to some of the things that Paul's talked about, which is that, you know, what is it that's, well, it's a question, I suppose, to what extent are there some of the changes that we're talking about actually very short term? And I wonder if there's, you know, that bigger transformation that's happened in British culture over the last 50, 60 years, you know, what happens to that, you know, so that future 20 years from now, I'm just wondering the extent to which, so, you know, I don't know, you know, will the Arts Council exist, the chances are the Arts Council will still exist 20 years from now, but there will still be public funding for the arts.
Is that just inertia?
And the arts
that makes
will be,
you say that.
Will have value and will...
Don't diss the Arts Council too much.
No, I'm not dissing
the Arts Council. No,
you know,
no, it's saying, will it still...
You know, whereas, you know, Last FM would have been...
It's got some good stuff going for it.
Last FM and other companies, Move.com, would have come and gone and been bought up by other big companies in the States. And I just sort of wonder, you know, so it does come back to that export question. What is it that's part of our culture?
Graham, can I just move over your shoulder to Denica, who can actually, I think, talk with some authority about what's been going on in the changes in this neighbourhood over a longer period of time. I mean, when did you first do the sort of open studios?
Well, I started in 1989, so I sort of seen Hackney.
There you go, that's 25 years.
Looking backwards, it's very interesting, the whole lot of debates. It's very interesting, the whole of the debate, and it almost feels like, having seen the photography exhibition of Man Ray, and the whole issue of, okay, surrealism or some movements, and I sort of questioned, well, do we have a movement now? Well, we don't, but we actually do, when I'm sort of listening to you. I think, sort of, so many things are happening, it's happening so fast. Like with Hidden Art, okay, well, we have to start new, and I presume that's why you connect to sort of see what things, which were mentioned also sort of by you, but the fact that it seems that nothing has changed, and things have changed, but it's not being used, because in Hackney you've got the digital cluster, and you have the culture cluster, and they don't talk. Yeah. So the artists, the designers that are still here, and Hackney still has the largest percentage of designers.
Yeah.
I've looked at it because we've got all the details and everything. But they, so there is no way that they can take advantage of all the digital things that are happening there. And we had to, because, okay, it's just me now, after 8 or 9 people. So you have to embrace everything, and you have to look at it. And I think that's sort of, if you get clusters working together, it will be really good. But of course, the rest of the world is lagging behind, because they still see England has got marvelous models they can copy, because they're not there yet. So someone from Taiwan was very interested in a Hidden Art model and sort of phoned from Taiwan, saying, "Well, we want to know what's going on." But of course, we're now in a very awful situation. Well, the whole of the sector, because the organisations that support the designers and who provided all the sort of the surfaces and whatever, no more. So those organisations don't get any money anymore. So the designers, who still don't have any money, well, how do they learn to be more commercial? Yeah, it's really, really, but I think it will be resolved. But the whole thing is, so much is happening, and as a designer, on your own, you can't do everything.
Can I just say something about Ian? Nice. So, well, Ian was doing up north. He tried me up to Liverpool for an event, some entrepreneurs thing. And one thing, so he put together a room full of mixture of developers, designers, photographers, musicians from around Liverpool. It was a stunningly diverse group. And given they were all from Liverpool, and probably half of them had never met each other before, and there was some commercial folk there as well, and I sort of was chatting to them afterwards, and saying, "So why? Look, you know how to write a business model, and
you know how to take great pictures, or you know how to do this and that. Well, yeah, but they go to this pub over here, and we go to that pub over there, and we go to this over there. And there's not we've got no natural point of connection.
That's exactly the same as what's happening in schools at the moment. I went to a schools conference and you just couldn't believe it. There were all these, it was about a creative conference, and there was the DLT people here, there was the digital people over here, there were the media people over here. And it's like, you think, like, actually, you know, you all work together. I mean, if you get an iPad, all those people are on that iPad, you know, and have made the iPad.
Yeah, but it's a human thing to be in groups, isn't it?
Yeah.
If somebody doesn't like, or you have a dislike for something else, you don't really mix with that. Creativity grows within the people that you like and the people that you throw and the thoughts that come from them. It's like being an artist.
We exclude ourselves from, you know, commercially, you know, and certainly in the work world, through language. And so often, if you know, I'll be sitting in a pub with the developer mates, and I'll go into marketing speak or, you know, consulting speak, and all of a sudden they just go, what? Or they'll go into,
well, that's,
you know,
and
I'm glad we're taping this. I don't really have to transliterate that one.
but often it takes effort.
Can I just sort of draw a bead between what Graham was saying and what Denek was saying? Are we preserving the wrong stuff? Because we've just said that, you know, there's a reasonable certainty that the Arts Council will still be here in 20 years. I've worked with the Arts Council an awful lot, and I'm not a big fan. But Denica's organisation has just been stripped of all its funding over the last 2 years. So we're pursuing that thing that that Lord Heseltine always laments in terms of industrial policy. There isn't actually an industrial policy. There's no plan. And we're investing in the wrong stuff. And all the stuff that's coming up from the bottom... The stuff that David's doing and the stuff that Dinnicker's been doing for 25 years is the first stuff to get cut. So shouldn't we actually be taking an axe to the Arts Council?
And
using that as culture to...
I mean, the last thing we should do is shut down the Arts Council, or the British Council, but I do think there's an interesting parallel here. In the same way that... And I don't want to bring in... Well, I'm going to bring in a note of economic pessimism. In the same way that I lamented that the cluster effectively came to nothing... And that we are still... No, it didn't come to nothing.
But you didn't ask how it ended.
No, but in the same way that those Shoreditch businesses essentially remained creative and technical service businesses, in much the same way, all those fabulous artists that are designer makers that Danica worked to support and that Graham and me and others funded are artisans. And after 10 years of investment and support and cost building, they're still artisans. None of those became... Very few. Like, it's hard to think of a very large-scale... design and manufacturing employing 300-400 people. In the same way, our fashion industry, again, Hackney has got more fashion designers than anywhere else in Europe. How many major fashion houses have we got? The main problem we seem to have is one of scale, and I think that comes down to Ian's point around having a really coherent industrial strategy for growing this sector.
It's an existential crisis.
But you don't need 200 people to be successful and sort of like...
Well, you do if you're wanting economic returns and you're wanting prosperity and jobs and growth for the people that live in the city.
Yes, but if you look at businesses, it also is in fashion, it's small businesses that are successful and then grow and develop. If you can't help them in the beginning... Then you're stuck.
It's absolutely true. I mean, if you look at international businesses like David Mallet, they employ like 40 people. It's what they do with their licensing and IP that really cuts it, rather than what they manufacture. But
yeah, he just talking licensing. I buy that, but also can I just say that what we end up with is sort of like fair weather friends, where when people are down, they're much more willing to collaborate because it's new business opportunity and opens doors. What happened with us, with the cluster, is actually, you know, if you actually track exactly when it happened, it was the crash, post 9/11, right? So everybody was kind of screwed at the time, because everybody was looking for new businesses, and that's why everybody came together. As soon as we recovered from that by 2003, people started going the wrong way, and what we hadn't done, as Ian was there for this, what we hadn't done was formulated a way for it to be sustainable in fair weather, right? We provided a really good backbone, right, for when everything was really awful. Right, and actually collaboration for SMEs, right? And actually the thing you got me up to is how do you do that? I mean, how can you actually make it? You know, and scalable, come on, scalable is scalable, and you've got all sorts of degrees of scalable. And you can get from 5 people to 50 people and still be adding to the GDP and still actually, given that 97% of companies
say,
in the, you know, in the
say,
country
just
are
to,
in
just
that
to,
spectrum.
Just to blow the trumpet what's happening here and to challenge Tom a bit. This event is scaled off a one-person business, two-person business, okay? The entire operation of the fifth sector, the entire operation of my business for the last 15 years has been about a series of interlocking networks. And this evening is about a series of interlocking networks. Now, there's a problem with measurement. It's very hard to measure the impact of those interlocking networks. And I know that, again, that's that piece of work that Ian's doing in terms of entrepreneurs here and in New York and San Francisco. And actually, rather than take a further comment, because I know it's a longer piece, I'd like to publish what you're doing alongside what we're doing here on the website and get people to follow it up. But are we just finding it really hard to see the wood for the trees here? Is that what's happening? I mean, Tom, come on, really. You're the last person I really expect to be advocating a kind of straight-line, scalable industrial model for great industries.
I mean, what you're talking about in this fifth sector is... Yeah, sorry, Kat, do you want to come in?
Yeah, no, I think that we're talking about complete... Why do you need to have a massive company and a massive scale in the economy that we're in?
You don't need to be massive, but this was an event about export, yeah? And the fifth sector and all these other kind of lifestyle small businesses... haven't done a great deal of that. They haven't done a great deal of... They haven't done it. And those lovely businesses in Hackney that you've supported, how many of them are generating significant economic returns for the people who live there in terms
Quite
of employing export earnings? How many are employing significant numbers of people? In the same way that companies around, you know, German design and manufacturing companies do, how many of all those East London design companies... How many are now worldwide brands?
I'd like to bet Michelle Mason sells more overseas than she does in London.
You've got a
big hand at the back. Big hand at the back. Andrew.
I actually disagree with what you're saying, because it's also like you're putting the cart before the horse. You're saying, why don't we have big brands? But it's like, there are fundamental structural problems of why we don't have big brands or big companies. So it's not actually the company's faults, or these small companies' faults, that they haven't gone big. It's actually the structure around that's supporting them that's actually failed them. So what you're saying, I actually disagree with, because you're putting the cart before the horse. And what we actually need to be focusing on is, why haven't they been allowed to grow and prosper?
I don't disagree at all. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, what I'm saying is, we need the industrial strategy.
The main argument was, is name one big company. And
then because we haven't had the time to enable that.
Where I come in behind, and sort of the way you must credit to, an industrial strategy doesn't necessarily have to be one which is about growth and big companies. Sorry, it doesn't have to be about big companies. And I think some of what you're saying is...
It's going to be about sustainability.
What we haven't had is an industrial strategy, and we've got a series of cottage industries which are incredibly fragile, and are working from hand to mouth, and actually don't have... And the support structures that exist, both formal and informal, public sector funded and private, you know, and you know, the lack of capital that exists in and around places like Tech City means that actually it's an incredibly fragile existence, even for those companies that don't want to grow but that are interlocking and all of that. And I think that I think what Tom's talking about is the need for industrial strategy, whether or not that means growth. But what we haven't got is a coherent strategy that says, and maybe it's what you were talking about and what Ian is working on, you know, something that says the strength of these companies isn't about scale, the strength of the cluster is about the relationships. The strength of the cluster,
that's completely counter the Silicon Valley notion.
It's a different strategy. And I would say, just one last thing I was going to say, which is really, really important that we always forget, and I've seen in the government rhetoric around Tech City, is that the rhetoric hasn't been about content. It's been about digital and it's been about tech, and the investment and the rhetoric has been about tech.
Shouldn't it be about business models? You know, how do we monetize content as opposed to how do we create content? We've got a really long history of creating content. Mm. If that's the game play, which I'm not sure I agree with entirely, right? But I'm a digital guy, so I would say that. But I'm a geek, film geek, and it's like, so how do we enable filmmakers to actually monetize their content in easier ways? How do we, you know, get easier routes to market? I was working with a film which was shot in Shoreditch, which was one of the first actual motion pictures shot in Shoreditch. Right? And could I get it on Love Films or Netflix for love or money? Could I hell? Because actually, you've got to be backing from major studio or major distributor to actually get it onto Netflix, because they can't be bothered dealing with independents. Can't we deal with that? You know? There's so much content that we're creating that nobody will ever see.
Yeah.
But
you know, because...
Or if
it's
just to do... So, you know, and that makes the money.